Welcome back, everyone, to our Groundskeeper Chat series. I'm your host, Meg Krueger, and this may be one of the last times you see me as a solo artist because I am now being joined by my co-host, Weston Appelfeller. So I'm going to give him the opportunity to introduce himself, say his title because he told it to me a couple minutes ago, and I'm not even going to attempt to say it. I'm going to put him on the spot. Weston, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thanks, Meg. I appreciate you letting me co-host with you. I am the market technical advisor for Pioneer Athletics, which basically means I help oversee the grass seed fertilizer and pesticide lines. And so new here. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to joining you. So our first guest with me is the co-host. I'm extremely excited for. This is someone I've known for a very, very long time. It is the director of grounds with the Philadelphia Union, Mr. John Torres. John, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hey, Weston, nice to see you. Meg, nice to meet you. Thank you for the invite.
Awesome. Definitely. Well, I'm going to dive into the first question, and I think this is the most important question you should get or will get this entire episode. Tell us about life outside of work.
Outside of work. Wow. Okay. You guys surprised me with that one, but I'll tell you what, it's nothing but joy. Anything that a husband and a wife could ask for, I'm sorry, a husband and father could ask for. So I have a wife. We've been married now for 8 years. We have two beautiful daughters, one 5 who just started kindergarten and one who's 3. It's just a blessing to be able to go home and come home to a loving family and everything that's involved with a household of 3 women. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
I am also outnumbered in the home. I have 2 sons, 3 and 6 month old. So I think the 3 of us could all probably swap some war stories that we have.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. What are you do to make a balance between work and home life? What do you try to accomplish in work to be able to get out of work in time to enjoy life outside of work?
Well, I think first thing is establishing priorities with work, and obviously establishing priorities with the home life. So getting into work, planning your day, planning your week is, well, actually, with my wife, she's a planner, right? So we're looking weeks and months out in advance. So it's just knowing what's priority and getting the jobs done that you absolutely have to, and knowing your cutoff points to balance that out, right? You know, you can't, you know, daycares have that final say of 5 o'clock must be picked up or else there's a late charge. So yeah, you gotta skate out of work, you know, a little bit before that to make it happen.
Awesome. Well, thanks for answering those two. I think those are something that as groundskeepers, we often take for granted. Life is not just about work. And so I wanted to ask that question right off the bat to bring back the importance of what that is. So,
and yeah, of course, you know, and for groundskeepers, you know, it's important, right, to have that balance, you know. You know, happy wife, happy life, right? They say, and you gotta do your part there, and then obviously when you get to work, same deal. You know, you gotta make sure that your colleagues and, you know, subordinates are all, you know, happy and ready to go.
Awesome.
So even though we put you on the spot there, it was very eloquent what you said. It's almost as if it was rehearsed. So it feels like you have that part dialed in, and I think something I've liked what I've heard some people say is that it has to be as fluid as the job is. You know, there's going to be seasons of your life at home and seasons of your life, you know, at work that require more of you, and just having that communication set up on both fronts, the home front and the work front, to keep everything fluid and flexible.
Correct. Yeah. And just kind of also just to add on that too, just kind of know that it's a roller coaster ride, right? There's the ups and downs, and you know, there's peaks where you're working 3-4 weeks straight, right? But then, you know, you just kind of have to think about it, that there's going to come a lull, right, where you can enjoy, relax, take some time off. Right? So.
Awesome.
How important is the communication when those walls are coming up with both your staff and your wife?
So I think for me, I'm, you know, I'd like to say I'm a veteran in Major League Soccer. And my wife, I got to give her a lot of credit. She's put up through a lot, but she's learning with me. She's gaining that experience of my schedule. So she kind of knows. So really I just have to show her the schedule and she kind of knows, right? Those weekends are gone. You know, but then she's always looking for those open weekends, right? Hey, there's no game. Let's plan a vacation or a weekend away. And sometimes, you know, I have to disappoint her because sometimes, you know, you get a free weekend. Well, that means sometimes that's work as well too. You know, so it's like you said, it's all about communication. It's the most important thing.
Well, I appreciate that. So.
Well, Dev, you touched on it a little bit, and you mentioned that you would be considered a veteran. So tell us a little bit about how long you've been in this position, but then kind of your turf origin story from start to finish.
Oh, boy, yeah, we got to go back a ways. So I graduated from high school in 2000, and I would say that right off the jump, like that was when, you know, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was a soccer player growing up, and kind of knew that soccer had to be a part of my life somehow. I think very quickly though, I realized I wasn't going to become a professional soccer player. So that was kind of out of the question, but to be a part of where I'm at today, it's, you know, I couldn't ask for much more, and everything that I've got to experience along the way. But, to back up again though, you know, I started right out of college, made the soccer team at Owens Community College in Toledo, Ohio. Made the soccer team. They asked, you know, what was my major? I had no idea. The time I was doing landscaping. So I saw that they had a program. So I jumped into the landscape and turf program at Owens and really haven't looked back. Had an opportunity to work at Sylvania Recreation Parks Department, where I used to play soccer as a kid, and just thought it was just the coolest thing to be able to go back, maintain the fields and the complex where I used to play, and that pretty much set my path. And quickly after, Major League Soccer, you know, they started the season in 1996, so it took a while, right? It took like I want to say 4 to 6 years, you know, before Major League Soccer really got a foothold in the United States and pretty much for everybody, for me as well too. But saw that there was a new industry of sports fields, you know, in soccer, in professional soccer. And right then and there, I knew exactly that's what I wanted to do. And being from Ohio, Columbus Crew Soccer Stadium was the very first soccer specific stadium built in the United States. And Darren Daly, who was the head groundskeeper at the time, you know, it was awesome just being able to look up to him and everything that he accomplished and set a path for everybody, including myself, Weston, and many others who walked through Crew Stadium. And just from there, that's it. I knew my career was made for me. And transferring to Ohio State, I then, you know, opened up a lot more opportunities for me. I got to meet my lifelong friends now. And then obviously got to got opportunities to work at Crew Stadium. I got to go overseas for a summer to work at Arsenal. Opened up my eyes completely again to higher expectations, high standards for soccer fields, and then from that point, like it wasn't long after, you know, I graduated from Ohio State, and had this opportunity here in Philadelphia to where I'm at today. So, and then my journey here with the Philadelphia Union, it's been now over 13 years. And, you know, that's a story in itself too, from when I started to where we are today. And I feel like we can probably get into that a little bit later.
Definitely. Well, you are like the textbook example of probably what we're trying to get out into the industry. Someone that had a passion for sports, but, you know, didn't know if they could play at the professional level, and then found a way to stay in the game. Like that, your story right there, I was like, I want to send this to like four people who are like at that stage right now, and like inspire them to consider this career. Cause wow, like, I can't imagine to be someone who is passionate about soccer all your life and then be seeing it from this point of view and kind of living out your dreams in like a way you didn't, you know, foresee when you were maybe in high school or even college.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think some of the questions you have here for us, for me, I think we can probably get into more topics about, you know, and kind of and expand kind of that same topic there too. So.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, just following up with that, you know, how have you seen the role of a groundskeeper evolve? So, you know, you said even just in the last 13 years since you've been in Philadelphia, like how has that role really evolved into the professional, you know, position that it is today?
Yeah. So thinking about that question, you know, there's two points that really stick out to me. One is technology, right? I think you can't avoid the technology that that we have in our industry at the moment. And then two is, and I want to kind of just target just Major League Soccer, that the standard of play from the players, teams has increased. I mean, I don't have a quantitative number to that, but I could say it's probably over 100% from when I probably started, you know, at least, you know, speaking for perhaps the Philadelphia Union, you know, so which I've seen firsthand that, you know, we were at the bottom of the table the first few years. And now, you know, last season, you know, playing in the championship final game. So like it's the standard of play, it has increased, which with that comes higher standards for the surface, which then just has to force you to be better all around as a groundskeeper and as you know, and providing results on the field.
That's the pressure that comes with having higher standards. I guess, how have you handled that as yourself and then, you know, with your staff?
Yeah, good question. You know, that's probably a very long-winded answer there. But I would say first and foremost is having the staff, having the proper staff, right? Having individuals that take just as much pride in what I'm doing as myself having high standards. And I think we've, you know, we have that set. You know, I have a great staff who work endless hours, you know, without having to be forced or, you know, really asked to. You know, I have a great number one in CJ Buck, who's just, you know, phenomenal at what he does. So it's a lot of credit goes to the staff. But then also too, you know, again, there's endless amount of you know, answers to what you asked, and communications, big one, you know, communicating with the front office executives, communicating with technical staff, you know, explaining plans and procedures to making a high quality surface, because there is a lot that's involved. There's a lot of planning, a lot of purchasing that's involved. So having a good plan, being able to communicate it, and then obviously execute.
And really, like, at what level or position within like a crew or an organization does a groundskeeper really start being exposed to some of that planning, the purchasing, developing budgets? You know, is it something from day one that you start to get a taste for it, or when does that really happen naturally?
Well, I think if you're asking me here personally with my organization, my department, it's kind of, unfortunately, it's probably more of a, okay, well, it's mainly in my seat, right? That has that responsibility. But then I think it's also then the opportunity is there, right? To share that responsibility. And that's what I've tried to do with many of my first assistants is to get them involved into some of the high, I guess maybe more meaningful tasks and important tasks. And just to put it out there too, for anybody who doesn't know, but Weston and I, we work together here at the Philadelphia Union. And I think, and it's not like at that time, I just started out. And it at that time, I never considered Weston as an assistant. And I'm sure he didn't consider me as a boss. But if anything, we worked together. And that's kind of, and actually, it was the perfect thing to probably happen for me in my career is to have him for the time I did, because I think it created a good foundation to how I treat somebody in that position, where we're exchanging ideas, sharing, sharing our knowledge, right? And then of course mistakes happen. You do something, it doesn't work, or all of a sudden disease pops up, and then you're just like, scrambling to figure out what to do. But that's part of this job and career, right? Is dealing with those mistakes and trying to figure out a solution. So kind of getting off topic there, but I would say then the opportunity for those individuals who want to learn, like say for instance a first assistant, they also have to kind of prove themselves and knock on the door as well too. So like if there's people that are not ambitious and a go-getter, then you know the results are going to happen. There's really not going to be a lot of knowledge sharing. But CJ Buck, he's knocking on the door every day, right? Asking. And now he's he got rewarded, and he's now involved in a lot of purchasing and budgeting responsibilities.
John, I know, when we worked there together, it was very early in your career, and it was a very hard, stressful summer. You being a first-time boss at that position, and the weather was absolutely awful. What are the things that you've learned or sort of the data points that you've been collecting over the course of your 13 years that allows you to then be able to talk to upper management or talk to coaches and get the specific things that you or your staff may need in order to be successful?
Yeah, I think the first thing to answer that question is to kind of just is probably record keeping, right? I think for one, record keeping is probably one of the most important things. And then once you see year after year, you start to see kind of trends, right? You see those trends, and then that helps you plan for budgeting, plan for purchasing. And in that case, record keeping, and as far as like, and then just experiences, right? Documenting a certain event that happened. Here in Major League Soccer, most stadiums have, a multi-use facility. So, it's not just soccer, it's rugby, it's lacrosse, it's football, et cetera. So for one is documenting these, these events, documenting all the usage of the field. And I wouldn't say that I have that all together, from day one, year one. It's an evolving process to be able to document everything and to see those trends. So, at this point now, it's 13 years later, I feel like I'm in a good spot through what me and my staff have done and accomplished over the years. But all that documentation is now, we can now go into budgeting season and say we need an extra, whatever it might be, 10,000 for fungicides, or we need an extra two pallets of ryegrass seed to oversee Bermuda. So it's a lot of those trends and documentations that you need to know to be prepared.
Definitely. And for maybe a groundskeeper that, you know, it's their first or second season and they haven't necessarily like secured themselves a seat at the table yet to even present those trends or data points, what would be like your advice or resources to help them get in front of the decision makers or get in front of the people that are going to move money around so that they can, you know, present those trends and have them be effective for the organization?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think every organization is kind of set up a little different. So like, you know, we're in my current situation, we're actually kind of a third party to the Philadelphia Union. So I don't directly report or work for the Philadelphia Union. I work for Oakview, the Oakview Group, 360. So we're a venue management company, but being here, you know, we're still all one, right? We're, you know, I'm based here 100% of the time. So we're still one family, but our staff here, you know, we have a general manager for the stadium and I report to him. And I would say that there's been opportunities. There are opportunities that could present themselves if you are ambitious enough to find those. There's moments, or even if it's just a quick chat with the general manager or with an executive or somebody with the technical staff, is getting into situations and making yourself known, making yourself visible, essentially, and kind of not just trying to be that person that's on the field working and not, you know, not acknowledging the staff around. So it's kind of almost like just as important as networking outside of work, it's just as important to network with internally, right? With other departments, with other executives. And I think that's the one thing, is that you got to make yourself known, because there's many times where I've heard my bosses or executives say, "Hey, who's that guy that works for you? Oh, that's, you know, so-and-so who's been here 2 years." Right. So it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe I need to do a better job too of putting them out there too. But it's also, that's kind of a two-way street as well. Right. So it's just kind of making yourself known and getting into situations where you can present yourself.
Awesome. You talked a little bit about networking there. How important is it for you to talk with other groundskeepers about what successes they've had in asking for budget money or asking for a new field or trying to get a team to, you know, just give up some of the assets that they could be putting towards another department, put towards your department in order to help the overall success of a franchise?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, it's extremely important, right? To network with our fellow colleagues and counterparts. It's something that it's, you know, maybe I don't do enough, but it's something that when I do, it's so effective, right? It could just be one conversation. It could be, you know, a text message or something that it just helps you in so many ways. That and also too, and maybe this isn't the best way, but is examples, right? So for instance, you know, we travel all across the country, right? Playing and say, you know, some random city venue has grow lights, has sub-air system, or has something that is a very expensive tool, right? Well, there's always then conversations after, well, you know, how come, you know, this place in the cold tundra can have a field so great? Well, you know, I think it's because of this and this and this, right? And I've spoken with this person and this can happen. So a lot of that, I've had many conversations like that with executives here, with, you know, this place X has these tools and I think this will help us. And it has happened. We've been able to be successful in some situations just like that.
Well, and I think in a way, those are data points on their own. Like, you know, just keeping your ear to the industry, keeping connected with your fellow groundskeepers so that you could say, like, when an executive's like, well, why were they able to pull this off? And it's like, well, here's like, you know, the entire time lapse of their field renovation last season. And like, they installed this and now they have grow light. Like, using other people as data points as well could, you know, be an effective tool. I think definitely a good reason to stay in contact with everyone as well.
100%. And when I said I probably don't reach out enough, I think that's probably more in tell to social media these days, which, you know, again, social media is a huge tool for us groundskeepers and in sharing stories and, again, sharing the successes and failures. You know, all it takes is one picture. You know, pictures, you know, as they say, is worth a thousand words. And you can kind of get a lot out of social media too. So there's pluses and minuses to that, right? You kind of, you know, you get to see a lot from around the world, but then you kind of lose that dialogue, don't you? So it's a little bit unfortunate, but at the same time, it's still effective, right?
Yeah. Well, there's someone else on this chat that doesn't utilize social media at all, but we might have to change his ways a bit.
Well, see, Weston, though, he's no stranger to a phone call. He'll call you, and then you an hour later, you're like, oh man, where did they go?
I have learned about those. That's crazy. I've had a few of those so far since he started working here.
just want to stay in communication, John.
Yeah,
just trying
yeah.
to keep up with what's going on, and would rather do it that way than scrolling.
Yeah, see, but and it's just as effective too.
Well, luckily you also have CJ who does a good job at documenting for you. And I think that is like a good way for, you know, directors or people that may not want to be forward facing on social media is to almost like assign it as a task to someone else on the crew. Like if you see someone who has an interest in it, you know, be like, hey, you can run with this as long as it's within company guidelines. Like I could definitely tell the gentleman out at ASU, like after Brian, what's his last name? Remind me of his last name.
Brian Johnson, when Brian Johnson left? Yeah.
Yes. Once he left, Josh took over, and you can tell that like Josh has, like he loves making TikToks, loves being on Twitter, and it's like a part of his gig in a way. And I know Brian was doing a lot of it. So it's cool to kind of see the totem pole, you know, or the torch be passed off that way. But John, you have the benefit of CJ kind of taking care of that avenue for you if you want to stay dark on social media.
100%. Yeah, he can have that. So
but the question I wanted to follow up with, you know, are there any resources you're currently using? And I mean, that can be as simple as like an Excel sheet that you guys have had for years and years, or any advice that you could give others as far as helping justify those labors and costs. You talked a lot about data points and trends, but is there any tech or resources that you're using right now?
The first thing that jumps to mind is Google Drive. Google Drive has been very key for us. And again, that's for a lot of documentations, right? But everybody's kind of have to realize too, that's, there's a lot involved in what we do, right? That, you know, it's not just cutting grass, right? It's invoicing. So keeping track of invoices, keeping track of equipment, which becomes very vital, right? You know, we have, you know, $500,000, if not more, of equipment. So it's like, you know, making sure that that's always running properly. I would say probably, and then obviously is our daily log too, of being able to record everything that's done on a daily basis. Because I think in order to plan for the near future, it's important to remember the past, right? and kind of cliche to say that, but it's, you know, we always have to have the calendar up and knowing what, you know, when's the last spray, when's the last granular application. But then, of course, then you always get thrown a side curve and or something, and you know, the weather comes up or trainings come up or something happens, and then your calendar gets ruined. But I'd say as far as technology, that's probably the biggest one is Google Drive, and we have so many different Excel sheets right now and calendars that help us in those preparations.
John, do you remember at what point you quit being a groundskeeper and started just working in like business side of the world? And what year did that transition from you being on a mower, you spraying, aerating, or something like that take place?
Great question. To think about a little bit, but I think that kind of coincides with about the same time that our team became that took that those next few steps and got better. So that meant, well, I can kind of remember exactly when, because you know, we had just and to kind of, I guess, give some backup to what I was saying of how soccer in the U.S. has evolved and increased, is that teams in MLS have now hired sporting directors, which are essentially general managers for teams. And, you know, we hired our first sporting director, I believe that was, 2017, 2018. And that individual at the time, he, you know, he was very, very high demanding, you know, wanted the pitch to be perfect. You know, he came from Europe with a lot of experience playing in Europe. And so he kind of was bringing the mentality of that they have in Europe with soccer is, you know, nobody's allowed to step on the field, you know, if you're not working or a soccer player, right? So the expectations kind of changed when he came on. And that meaning, you know, like I had to be involved in more communication processes, right? There was more meetings set. You know, there was, you know, with those expectations, right, comes, you know, obviously a budget that needs to be tweaked a little bit, you know, increased. So I think that was kind of what started everything. But then again, too, for me, I kind of consider myself, you know, a little ambitious, and not wanting to be, you know, in the same position, you know, year in, year out. So I kind of, you know, encouraged more responsibilities, and that meant outside of the playing field. And we have a great situation where we're at here, where we have a lot of property around the stadium, including our training facility that's right outside. So there, you know, me asking to be involved in more, you know, decision-making opportunities, being involved in more capital projects, that's kind of what set everything up too, where I had to lean more on my assistants and staff to accomplish the day-to-day objectives.
Well, definitely watching from afar. Sorry, definitely watching from afar. You've killed it and done a fantastic job since that point. And it seems like each year you take a little bit more and more on. And it's watching from outside, it's very impressive to see. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, it's been a while since you've been here. You know, if you were to ever come back, which you should and have to. You're going to see that, yeah, this place has evolved. And, you know, we essentially own all the property around the stadium now, and it's all Union branded. It's pretty nice. We got a nice little campus going here. So,
you know, and what's that like to, you know, have someone who used to work alongside you go on to have a successful career in the industry as well? Do you think that's something that all directors or head groundskeepers really aspire to do, is train the person up in order to to leave almost. Well, we would never want that to happen for you and CJ, but in a sense, you know, that's what we would hope, that we're, you know, inspiring the next person to be even better than us.
Oh, 100%. I mean, for me, it's probably one of the best accomplishments you can probably have as a, you know, a groundskeeper, you know, is knowing that somebody who's worked under you, for you, you know, with you, gone on to accomplish their goals, accomplish their, you know, their career. And I mean, not that I had a lot to do with Weston's career, but you know, he's probably one of the more ambitious people I know. You know, he paved his own path, but it's great to see, you know, to see what he's done and see what other previous colleagues of mine have gone on to. And I take it as I just take it as a high regard for them.
Take all the credit that, you can.
Yeah, you certainly paved a path for me, and I appreciate everything you did and the time that I was there. I have one more question, and I hope you know this has a fond memory attached to it, or something that you can look back and think, yeah, I really enjoyed that time. Who was the person that paved the path for you? Who do you look back as a role model, or somebody that you worked for with along the way, and think this is the person that I want to be like?
Now, I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, because I mean, for one, there's been just so many people that have helped me along my career. But I think if anybody who knows me knows my career, like yourself, Weston, because I think it's probably the same person for you as well, maybe. But it has to be Matt Williams, right? Matt Williams, who is now at with SGL. You know, at the time when I met him, he was the head groundskeeper at Crew Stadium. Me personally, I held him to one of the highest regards. I still do. He's done nothing but great things. Like, for me, it's been more of like, he never treated me as a subordinate, really. It was more of a friend, right? From like day one. Right. It's just his personality. You know, he likes to work hard, but he also likes to have fun. And to this day, it's, you know, he hasn't changed. It's great that I can consider him as a friend, but also as a colleague as well.
Thank you for asking that, Wes. And that's always one of my favorite things as someone on the outside, to see the family tree and make the connections, because I know Matt, but I didn't know that, you know, you both had interacted with him at some point in your career. So that's very cool.
Yeah.
And John has a list of like a mile long of people that he's worked with that are phenomenal in this industry. And for him to say, yeah, Matt, I'm sure that's going to mean a lot to Matt. And I'm sure that shows how much, you know, somebody meant to John as well. So.
Yeah. And again, too, I can't help emphasize, though, that, you know, as great as Matt is, there's been, like you said, there's been many people who have helped me, and they're going to probably, you know, I'm probably going to receive some messages or something or, you know, that, hey, why didn't you mention me? But, you know, it's, you know, we'd have to create another podcast for that topic.
It's almost like the disclaimer at the end of like a medicine commercial, like making clarifying that. So one of our last questions that we're going to leave you with is a new segment we're doing. It's called the Weather Report. And it's essentially, you know, things that you see out there in the industry that have you excited, or something you've done recently that, you know, is going to make a mark on your career. When I was telling Weston about mine, it's just, this is like my favorite time of the year, when all the college stadiums, all the NFL stadiums are getting ready for that big home opener. And, you know, they're posting all of their hype videos. That's been my favorite thing out in the industry, is just all the hype and all the excitement. And I was telling Weston, like, I think this time it's a lot more like, there's that anticipation for how the season's going to go. And there's a lot of excitement attached to that, opposed to sometimes in the spring when we're around this, you know, we're around the same type of season starting, but it's more of, you know, holy shit, I just hope I get through this. This is more, I feel like, an exciting time to be alive. Weston, we'll give John more time to think about his, and I'll put you on the spot for your weather report.
Yeah, mine is seeing all of the groundskeepers deal with Messi. And I know you've had to deal with that as well, but being a former Major League Soccer groundskeeper and seeing you know, everything that's going into these matches with him coming to a stadium, it is crazy to see from an outsider looking in at this point. So,
like I said, we're a good team now, right? You know, and kind of knowing that, like, okay, well, we have a chance, you know, to make, well, it's almost not even a chance, it's almost like kind of a given these days that we're making the playoffs, and we could compete for the MLS Cup. And this past season, you know, like Weston mentioned about playing Messi, you know, that was in the brand new tournament that was added in the League's Cup. And, you know, we hosted every game just about imaginable, except for the final. We hosted the third place game. So our team won. So we're third place out of however many teams that was, I think 47 teams. So it, you know, goes to show that, you know, what the Philadelphia Union are doing is great. So as excited as I am about the team, you know, we kind of know what we have to deal with is, you know, now we're in Champions League again next year. So now that means another early start. But again, I think we just got to be fortunate that we are playing these games, and it's great for the team. It's great for our fans to be in all these competitions and to do well. To see our stadium packed almost every game, if not sold out, you know, gets, you know, excites me. And of course, yeah, like you mentioned, Weston, Messi, you know, like, you know, we were selling tickets on top of people, right? You know, there's people on top of people, and it was great to see that. So I think just being, you know, in a time in Major League Soccer where it's on the up, it's on the rise, right? And to see the World Cup, you know, it's only, you know, couple years away until we have the mania of World Cup here in the United States and in Canada, Mexico. So you know, I think soccer here it's grown. It's gonna explode here in the next couple of years, right? So it's so that I guess that was a long-winded answer too, but that, I guess, to put that in a nutshell is the rise of soccer in the United States, right? So
perfect. Again, caught you off guard, but eloquently said. And to really bring it full circle, with a schedule like that, your wife is the true MVP of the Philadelphia Union organization.
Yes. I guess though, to put a cherry on top of that too, is that, you know, with the kids, you know, is getting them involved. And I tell you one thing, you know, is, you know, my two girls, they love watching the Union play. They love cheering. You know, they've been to a couple games now post COVID, which, you know, that kind of put a damper on a lot of things, but you know, they're not coming to matches and getting excited about it. Right. They have their jerseys, their gear, and, you know, chanting the Dupe song and everything. So yeah, it's good.
That's awesome, man. Thank you.